And welcome to Tabletop Game Talk On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we'll be revisiting episode 27 on solo games. That was 2 years ago. How have our views on solo gaming changed since then? We'll talk about that as well as look at some of the hottest solo games that have been released in the last 2 years.
But first, as always, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Diljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Achiretti. And thank you to our newest patrons, Emil Jewel Jacobson and Marina Stevens. Thank you. Welcome. And thank you to all of our other patrons as well. All right, Kitty, we've done our second Dice Tower News episode.
We have.
Kind of getting a rhythm. Want to thank Eric for leaving us a review. Anyone else who wants to leave us a review, our undying gratitude. Undying? That's good gratitude, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how much gratitude we'll have.
And I seem to remember you saying that someone had been a bit mean in your first review. I went back and listened and thought you guys were great. I don't know what they were talking about.
They weren't reviewing us. They were reviewing the podcast. They were reviewing a past host.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it now. Well, so that's good.
We just want to counteract some of those meaner reviews. And hopefully those meaner people aren't listening anymore. Kind of. Or maybe they do listen and they like us.
They'll love us and they'll go change their mean review to a nice one. That would be the best. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah. We're having fun over there. We're going to be playing with the format a little bit as we go, kind of adding... You know, kind of playing with it a little bit. This one we did a little bit more newscastery. I'm thinking of adding a couple other things. I sort of kind of want to add an editorial at the end where Kitty and I can just banter.
Yeah, but that would be good. Get a bit more loose.
I love
vibe
when you
going.
Air these ideas in front of our audience before I hear them.
Well, what do you think, Kitty?
Sounds great.
Perfect. These are thoughts in process, and we want to share them with the family of listeners. But the moral of the story is things will change a little bit. But as I was going back and looking at the Dice Tower News reviews, I said, I should look at our reviews as well. And I want to thank Jamin Boyd. Bide?
Bird? Nope, there's no R in there.
Yeah, Bide. Peck Tech, which I believe is Sean Peck. Dak Boy 25. I just love reading iTunes names. Go-Go Cluster. The Davis Family. Hi, Trevor. The Great Zambini. And Dara Show.
Sure.
Good. So speaking of pronouncing iTunes name, Eric, I've seen your thread on BGG. I have no idea how to say your name, unless it's the way we've been saying it. But
I've been saying Eric Zalander, but that must be wrong. And I looked it up and it's kind of like a Swedish, origin. I remember that Millennium series books, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. I think her last name was Zalander, but maybe it's Zalander. Maybe it's just the emphasis, Zalander. I don't know.
Maybe. I've been saying Jen's name wrong the entire time. And she's like a close friend of mine. I asked her this Saturday, how do I say your last name? And she's like, I'm not going to tell you. You're just going to have to say it wrong all the time. I'm like, okay, I'm happy to do that.
Feel free, patrons, to come and, you know, pay us to butcher your names. That's what this is for, right?
Yes. And in all honesty, we don't try to butcher your names, but we don't actually do any research on how to say them correctly either. Names are funny that way.
I did a little bit of research on Zalander, but it sounded like almost like with a Swedish accent. It was like Zalander. So it was like, is that right? Do I have to say it with a Swedish accent? I don't know.
So, but if you do want us to say your name correctly and we're not saying it correctly, by all means, email us or give us some, even smoke signals. I won't see those, but some way of giving us a phonetic spelling of your name and we'll try our best to repeat it. But we do not mean to offend. We mean to just have fun with them. But I do understand because my last name is spelled S-T-E-E-L-E and it's pronounced Steel. But many people, as I was growing up and in school, they pronounce it Steely, which is not my name. So I'm like, no, that's not right. So I understand when people say your name wrong, it's like, wait a minute, that's not what my name is. So correct us and we will do our best to fix it. And if we do it wrong again, correct us again. We're not trying to butcher names. All right, let's get to a topic at hand here. This is our first of our revisited series of episodes. We've been doing this podcast for 126 episodes. So 99 episodes ago, 99 weeks ago, we did an episode on solo games. That was episode 27. back then, we did, the first half was feedback, the second half was the episode. So if you want to listen to episode 27, just go to around minute 23 or 24, and that's where the topic actually starts. But I did listen to this entire episode. Josh, Kitty, I did not expect for you guys to listen to it, and I don't expect any of our listeners to go back and listen to it, although you can if you want to. We're going to revisit some of what we talked about there and kind of how we feel about it now, because at least for me, solo gaming has changed quite a bit from when we first talked about it. So before we get into any of these, what do you guys think? In the last 2 years, your views on solo gaming, what do you think?
I've definitely changed my views on solo gaming. I have picked up a few games that I really enjoy playing by myself, and it looks like, if I'm to believe what you've written here in the notes, I used to say I'd only play on an app, but I have picked up Maiden's Quest, and I play that game all the time. It's basically always in my purse. I have a deck put together that I'm playing through, but I think it's really just that. Although there are a few other games, maybe I've tried the solo version, mostly just to pick up the rules. I played the solo version of Sagrada and a couple other games, but it still doesn't hold quite the appeal to me that playing a multiplayer game, like with revised rules, is not the same as playing it with other people.
Yeah, I have one more that you might, by the end of the episode, I may convince you that you'll want to play solo as well. So we'll see when we get there.
Oh, I'm excited to hear about it.
And I think pretty much I'm almost exactly the same on solo games. I mean, I would certainly play... this doesn't really even count. I was going to say I would certainly play like a head-to-head game against someone online, which would feel kind of solo to me as someone who loves the social aspect of gaming. And that was something I mentioned last time. Like, I just want other people around. And I would still play a game where I'm not really interacting with this other person at all, but I am versing them, like, you know, on the app. Maybe I'd pick up, do Keyforge against someone, you know, there's no interaction there, but I'm like getting better at that game. And it feels like a solo pursuit in that sense. So, kind of twisting the definition there, but that's
yeah. So twisting, you're not really into solo games at all. Yeah.
Twisting the definition of solo game into a dueling game with somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, but who I can't even talk to. So for me, it will feel a little bit like a solo game.
I understand the distinction you're going for there, where I'll play Keyforge on the Crucible.online. I'll go and I'll play just to like learn my deck, get a little bit better before I go to an event with people in person. It feels like a different experience, but it is still not a solo game.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep. Unlike when I play Keyforge, I actually am playing it as a solo game by putting two decks against each other and playing the same way you would play in solo chess, which you're playing both sides. You're just playing against yourself.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've done that. You said that you started doing it and I tried it. But I think what I really need is a spinning board because I'm too lazy to stand up and walk to the other side of my table every turn.
I have a tabletop counter that I have a playmat on. And I stand pretty much when I play any game. So, yeah, it makes it easy. I just kind of walk around and get some exercise and play some board games at the same time. All right. So, in our episode 27, I started off saying that I would usually buy games that had a 1+ player count on them. But even though I would buy those games with the thought of playing them solo, I would almost never actually play them solo. Since then, like... So, Josh, you don't buy a lot of games, so I'm assuming that if you see a 1+, you don't care because you're looking for more like the party game, social games anyway.
Yes, exactly.
What about you, Kitty? Is there any game where it's like, oh, there's a 1+ on here, so I think I'll buy this game with the intent of, like you said with Sagrada, at least I will learn it solo and then, you know, so that's a plus to me as far as buying this.
I think it kind of depends on how the solo game is played. I enjoy the games where basically you're trying to beat a score. It gives you kind of like, this is a good score, this is a bad score. The games where you have to set up the board to play against you, I'm not going to buy. Like, I think there's Scythe has
the Automa
that you can set up and play against it, but you are doing extra work. It's not just like, oh, I played Scythe by myself. It's like you're basically creating an AI you're playing against. It's like playing in an app against an AI. And I don't enjoy that as much. Whereas something like Pandemic, where you can basically take the role of each person, you're just taking the turns and trying to beat the game yourself, that I'm much more likely to play.
Yeah. I will say one thing I've noticed as I'm looking at games these days, it's almost like everything has a 1+ on it now. Like whatever you know, publishers are looking at, it's like, if we put a 1+ on here, we're going to sell more games. So you have all kinds of it and all kinds of varieties.
I think many people are like aspirational solo players. So you don't want to buy a game that's just a solo game. You want to buy a game that can play. This plays 1 to 6. How versatile. What a great game to add to my collection. But actually, you end up playing it with 4 players all the time anyway.
Yep. But we did a little survey on BoardGameGeek, and I'm going to bring that up real quick. And the question was, have you ever played a game solo, excluding solitaire? And the results were kind of surprising to me. In 79% have said yes, and they were probably will again. So the answers were yes, but probably won't again. That was one person out of 29. Yes, and probably will again was 23 people. No, but I'm not against it is 4. And no, would never consider it is 1. So there are a lot of people out there that are looking at solo games as something they do, and they do quite frequently. And so it's interesting because even though I don't, it's not my primary way of gaming, I understand that it is the primary way of gaming for a lot of people. You know, we're all kind of lucky that we have a close group of friends. Our significant others will play games with us, even if they're word games. In your case, Josh, you know, Gloria is more than happy to play Scrabble. And so we don't have to play solo, but there's a lot of people out there that are, they are the gaming person in the relationship, or they're, you know, not in a relationship, or they live too far away from people and stuff, where solo gaming is the only thing they do. And I think that having that solo option on these games is a really good thing for publishers. And we're going to get to the top, I put the top 12 for 2018 solo games, and it's kind of really interesting what these games are. So kind of a teaser there. Let's see, Josh, you and actually both of you said you'd never thought of playing a solo game because of setup time. Is setup time still an issue? It sounds like that's still one of those things. It's not, setup time's not worth it to just play by yourself.
For me, for sure. I mean, that's why I kind of, the solo game I do play is Splendor, which is actually the app version, and there's no setup time for me. So I love that because it's just like, oh, the computer's going to do it all. So yeah, I would stick to that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to decide, and this is just kind of like our own definitions, is playing an app version of game against an AI playing it solo? And my purist person says, if it's not physical, it doesn't count. But in reality, it's sort of doing what, you know, Stonemaier Games' Automas are doing, which is just adding that AI player in there. So you're playing this game by yourself. You're playing by the actual board game rules. And yeah, it does sort of feel solo because it's definitely different than playing against an actual real person. So I play Through the Ages solo, well, Through the Ages on the app. And that's different than, I think you can play Through the Ages solo as well. But I know you can play it on the app because I've been doing it. And I'm definitely not playing against any real people. And I'm still playing the same game. So I'm going to give app-based solo credit.
So I'm going to bring up Carcassonne. I have 2 different digital versions of Carcassonne. I have the app on my iPad, and I have the game for the Switch. And on the Switch, it is you play against AIs. There's no like solo version. Basically, it's you're playing one player against AI players. And it's made to be more of a, what am I looking for here? Like a multiplayer game that you can play with the AIs. Whereas on the app in my iPad, it gives you kind of a solo version where there's no other person placing tiles. It's all you're playing against the tiles. And it's kind of got these goals that you're trying to set up. So it gives you, you know, how many cities you want to build, or you want to build roads with this length. You want to try to build a 2-road, then a 3-road, then a 4-road, and you're only scoring based on that. So it's giving you these different puzzly things. And I would say both are solo gaming to me. I do them by myself. It still feels like I'm not board gaming the same way I would like at a game party or at the store or with, you know, just a couple of people. It's much more against myself, regardless of how it is. But I think that the more traditional, no one else is taking a turn, even if it's a fake person, feels much more solo game to me.
Yeah, and I think Splendor does that in their app too. They have this entire challenge mode where it's just you're trying to meet goals. you're not necessarily trying to beat an opponent. Although sometimes your goals are, you know, beat this opponent with these goals or these rule changes or something. But I always found that interesting because it's not the board game anymore. And it is much more of a puzzly solo experience. And I really enjoy those. Josh, have you played the solo ones on Splendor?
Yeah, I enjoyed those. You know, I enjoy puzzles in general. So, you know, on that sense, I think the closest thing that comes for me to solo games is often, you know, my childhood. I remember getting puzzle books and it feels kind of like that. Like you say, you know, these games were often kind of puzzling something out, which I love.
Yeah. And I think one of the things we talked about on episode 27 was, and Kitty, you said this, if you're going to play a game solo, you're probably going to play the app version of it. Like even Solitaire, which is a card game, you still would play an app version of the Solitaire over playing like a, you know, have to get out a deck of cards and find a table space and, you know, play the game that way. Still like that?
I'd say I'm a little bit like that still, but I've branched out more into using the actual physical game. There are some games that I've picked up over that time period that I am likely to get out. Shahrazad is one that I like to play by myself sometimes. It's you can play it two-player cooperative, but it really feels more like a solo game. It's a tile lane, and you're trying to optimize these different story tiles to get number sequences, and that one's really fun. And Maiden's Quest, it's somewhere between Solitaire and almost like a collectible card game or a deck building game where you are stacking you're building your deck that you're going to play. It's almost like a dungeon crawl, or I'd say it is exactly a dungeon crawl that you play it like a fan solitaire game. And you get to choose your maiden, and that populates your deck with so many. It's a dress and saviors and weapons and health that you get to bring in. And then you choose your villain, and the villain brings in certain creatures that you're going to have to fight against. And so building the deck itself is part of the activity. And then it's much easier to play on the go. So I'll often use it as like a at home. I build my decks. I take my time. I pick my cards. And then I just stick it in my purse. And when I'm sitting there waiting for something to happen, I pull it out and play for a little while. And it's really easy to pick up and put down and come back to later. And so that one is a really great physical experience that I don't think would have the same feel on an app. Whereas something like Carcassonne, I'm not going to pull out all those tiles just to play by myself when I can do the exact same experience through an app.
And so Maiden's Quest is from WizKids game, and Shahrazad, is that like, I want to say Odin's Ravens or something like that?
Odin's Ravens is from the same publisher. It's Osprey Games.
Osprey, yes. Okay. I was getting the other game messed up with the, yeah. So yeah, and both of those are like really cool, and they're kind of designed to be solo. So they're like small, easy to set up.
Yeah.
Not a lot of like, you know, tear down time. And in Maiden's Quest, it's actually very, very portable as well, which I think is key to a solo game, which is going to go very contrary to my favorite solo game, which is Arkham Horror, the living card game, which is not
which
the
easiest thing. Which takes 9 million years.
Well, not really. You can get it down to, once you've got the mechanics of the game down, you pull out your deck, you look at the scenario, there's some setup to it, but the setup is maybe 5 to 10 minutes, and then the game itself will play for about an hour. And that, like, I can play through an entire solo campaign in a day in that, and like just have a great time at that. I don't know why Arkham Horror draws me so into that solo play, but there's something about, like, you don't roll dice or draw cards to resolve things. You draw tokens out of a bag. And there's just something about drawing a token and then revealing it in my hand, opening my hand and seeing that, where I have no urge to say, okay, that didn't happen, I'm going to draw something else. Because this was the fate. The fate's in the palm of my hand. And that's my biggest thing with playing solo games, is I feel like if there's no one else around, it's really easy to kind of cheat it. And if you have a game where it isn't something that like is easily cheatable, then I don't know. There's just something compelling about it, and I want to keep going back to it. So that's why I really like the Arkham Horror game. But now I have Sydney playing with me, and then being able to share that story with somebody else is really cool. So I'll actually have like multiple campaigns going. I'll have one campaign that's my solo campaign. I'll have another campaign that's hers and I's. And that's, it's just like, And I can play them both simultaneously and enjoy them both. And I just enjoy them in slightly different ways.
We did talk about Maiden's Quest, I think, a bunch in our cheating episode, because it is really tempting for me to cheat at that game, because when you're playing, you fan out five cards. And you're always allowed to see the sixth card. They call that being able to see down the hall. But it's really easy then to like, oh, what if I just slide the seventh? Or you have to, at some point, commit to making a decision, like, I'm going to fight this creature or I'm going to run away. And if you look like too far in, it's like, oh, well, I decided I was going to run, but now that I looked, I know that I can defeat it. So we'll just say that I said, oh, yeah, I'm totally going to fight this creature. Or you say, like, oh, I'm totally going to fight this creature. And then you fan out your cards and you're like, oh, look, I have a shield. I fled. I take no damage. It's just like, and you really, it's hard to keep yourself accountable with that. And I don't know if I could stick with that with Arkham Horror. I don't know if that experience would be all that different for me, like fanning out cards versus drawing a token from a bag. It seems so easy to me. I think it's how compelling it is to the story that, like, if it's a failure, it still makes a story to you, that it keeps you honest a little bit. Yeah. That if it's, it feels true to the play of the game to stick with it.
Yeah, I'll say one thing about Arkham Horror is, even if you fail, it is rarely the end of the campaign. Rarely does your character die. In fact, the game is set up to essentially prepare you for failure, and you're going to fail a lot. So when you do fail, it's not like, well, okay, fine, I failed, and now the game is over. It's, okay, I failed, and now I have to overcome something new. Something else has happened. Some other terror. But when you succeed, it's like, oh, I did it. This is amazing. And occasionally, failure will be like, it'll lose you the game. You know, we, Sydney and I were playing the Forgotten Age campaign, and we were in the last scenario. We just were drawing terrible encounter cards. Monsters kept spawning. We had to kill all these monsters. I had one check I had to do. I put everything pluses. I had a +7 to succeed. And I'm like, okay, if we succeed, we're fine. If we fail, then I'm dead and the campaign's over. And there's only one token. Actually, there was two tokens in the entire bag that could cause me to fail. And of course, I drew one of those tokens. I died. The campaign was over. Investigators lose the campaign. And we talked about it. It's like, well, we could reset this campaign. We could reset this scenario and start over. Or we could just say this was the result of it. And we decided, you know something? There's a story ending to this. There's an ending to what happened because we failed. Let's just take that and we can play this campaign again later if we want to.
Would there have been any incentive, though, if you hadn't been playing with Sydney, to maybe fudge it a little bit?
If I hadn't been playing with Sydney, what I probably would have done is called that campaign done, read the ending, and then reset that scenario and played it again with a basically just saying, I fast forward to scenario 6, or actually scenario 8, and play that again and see what happens as a second playthrough. In that way, it's sort of kind of resetting it a bit. It's still a little cheaty, but at the same time, wanting to see a happy ending for my characters is also what I wanted to do. But I don't know. I mean, she is the one that said, no, we can be done. And I said, okay, that's fine. Where I'm the one that suggests, is like, well, we could reset the scenario. She's like, nah, we can be done. I'm like, okay. So yeah, it would have been trickier as a solo. I will give you that. Although the campaigns I have played through solo, I have let them end when they ended, mainly because when you're playing solo, you can play pretty quickly. So you could, you know, I could say, okay, I'm going to remake the deck and I'm going to play through with this again with a different character or whatever and try it again. Now I know what's coming up and I'm not playing blindly. I'm actually building towards that campaign. So there are some benefits to just saying, okay, I failed, but now I have some information for the next playthrough. Josh, anything to add?
No, not on that particular one. Although it does feel a little bit, if you're playing with Sydney, like you're skewing the idea of solo as well. Is it still solo if you're sitting next to Sydney doing this?
Well, she keeps me honest.
Okay. That's fair enough.
I think that does bring a really good topic up, which I think we talked about a bit in the first episode, which is co-op games as solo games. Yep. So I play a lot of Pandemic on the app as a solo game. And that feels very solo to me, even though I am playing the exact same game that four people would. I'm just making the decisions of four different roles. It's still it's all open information. So it feels very like solving a puzzle and less like, you know, I'm playing against an automatic player. I think that a lot of co-op games, like pure co-op, not Hidden Trader, none of that, those co-op games really lend themselves well to having a solo app or just playing it yourself at the table. Even there's no real difference between the app and the game Pandemic, except they don't have to get out 80 cubes.
Yeah, pretty much anything with pure open information. So Pandemic, The Captain is Dead, those type of things where like all the information is out there and you're discussing as a group what your character will do can be played solo pretty easily. In fact, in Arkham Horror, there's two versions of solo that people will play. The first will be true solo, so you're playing a single investigator through the campaign. And the other one is two investigator solo, so you're playing two investigators, but you're still playing both investigators. And it's not really considered true solo because it could be played with one investigator, but it gives you that solo experience in playing multiple characters. Technically, you could play three or four characters, but that would just be, I think, overwhelming for one person to do because you have to manage all these open hands and all these different board placements and stuff. It's sort of like Gloomhaven, which you talked about.
Table presence, yeah.
Yeah. Like Gloomhaven, the solo experience for Gloomhaven is to play two characters. So it's a very similar experience to two character in Arkham Horror. And we did talk about Arkham Horror in the first episode, in the episode 27. And it's funny hearing me talk about it now when at that point, I'd only played, I think, the starter. And now I've played just a lot. And I can kind of, like, what I said was not wrong, but there's a lot more there that I could have added that would make it a lot more interesting. Like when I was playing it, when you play first the first starter box, you just don't get the feel for it, especially if you just play the first scenario. Then you definitely don't have the feel for it. You play all three of those scenarios and you're like, wow, this game can go so many places in one, in like a three scenario thing that it's crazy. So, and as they release new campaigns, they just kind of keep pushing the limits of what this game system can do. And it's really, really cool. I can't talk about it enough. Another game we talked about was One Deck Dungeon. This is a solitaire dungeon crawl game. And at the time, it was a solitaire game that you just played. You had a deck of cards, and the cards were multi-use. You can flip them up. They're going to be monsters that you're going to attack, and then they have skills and potions and ability modifiers. So if you kill the monster, then you're going to power up your character with it. And it's all in the same deck, and you're going to roll dice to resolve things. We did talk about roll to resolve versus input randomness and things like that at the time, but One Deck Dungeon has since released an app and it is amazing. We talked about it briefly, I don't know, months ago, but it has an achievement system. So you can keep playing this and you can power up your characters over game. So it's almost like a legacy style type thing, or at least a campaign style, where if I keep playing the thief is going to get more and more powerful and I can take bigger and bigger bosses on, which make more and more difficult dungeons. And like, I played the heck out of the One Deck Dungeon app. It was just, I would remember staying up like 2 or 3 hours every night in bed just playing this app. So as soon as the baby comes, I might end up doing that again. We'll see. Because you can play it with one hand as well.
One-handed games with babies where it's not timed, where you can take your time to take your turn, those are so great when you're holding a baby and your other arm is falling asleep and you just need to distract yourself, because if you move, that baby's going to wake up and start crying and you'll just be like, ugh, done.
Yeah, I think honestly, this is one of those things where, you know, if I'm staying up late and Sydney's going to get up early and I need to keep myself awake, you know, solo games might be the way to do that. And maybe that's going to be in video form because that I can do in my hand. But if it's a matter of like, okay, he's sleeping, but I know he's going to wake up in a couple hours and I just need to pass an hour or two of time, I pull out Arkham Horror. I pull out, you know, one of these other mini solo games we're going to talk about in a minute and, you know, try them out or learn to play them. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of late nights where I'm just like reading rule books to keep myself awake, which is ironic because I think for most people, reading rule books would put you to sleep. But
it's interesting because, you know, bringing up the video versions of these is kind of like reminding me why I find it hard to get into solo games. And I think, you know, it's often that part of it's that kind of meta of like, I'm so socially oriented and it's all about, you know, gaming is all about people for me. But then I think to video games, and I'm like, well, that's often a solo thing for me. You know, I play these big RPG games in video games and I'm really into them. And there's just so little friction and then so much stimulus. So it's kind of like, for me, I don't have to set up this thing and, like, you know, put all the pieces out. It's just like press a button and go. And then also the kind of interactivity, it's like immediate. I think I've got that quite kind of short patience, and I just want something, you know, big and like juicy and kind of crazy to be happening and be interactive. And I feel like, for me, the solo games that I've played haven't quite had that element. But the ones that have hooked me have been like the app versions, which are just so frictionless and so easy to pick up and have a go at.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's a good point, because if, like, I have several gaming surfaces and I can have a game set up in different places, and I could be a solo game where I come back to it and resume a turn or two and then leave, and then come back and resume a turn or two and leave. But in physical form, when I come back to it, it's like I need to switch my mindset and say, okay, what's going on? Recalculate everything that's going on. But in video game form, when I open up the app, it's like, oh, here's the state of everything. The app is telling me everything that's happening. It just takes it over for me.
Yes and no. I have a problem sometimes when I play Pandemic on the app. If I set a game down for too long and I come back to it, I'm more likely just to restart a game, like start a new game, than try to pick up where I was. Because if you lose the flow of a game, it's just gone to me. Like, I'm going to take a couple turns to figure out what I was doing, and I don't want to just sit and stare at the board for so long. And with Pandemic especially, it builds so much from the beginning to where you are in the middle that you don't see those changes happening slowly. You have to pick them all up at once. It's too much. And if I've put it down for, I'd say, more than a couple of hours even, I'm more likely just to hit new game than to try to figure out what's going on in my old game.
Yeah. Well, also with Pandemic, you need to kind of remember what's in the infection
and
deck.
Like having to go through the deck, and you can look at the deck in the app, all the discards that you have, and all of the information is, but it, you have to like go through and take the time to like relearn your board state. Yeah. And I'm more likely just to we'll do it again. And it's so much easier in the app to just hit new game instead of a physical game where I'd have to reset everything physically myself.
Yep. Now I will say that games where you're playing the board state, where basically, and I hate to keep bringing it back to this, sort of, kind of, I don't really hate it, but KeyForge, when I'm playing that solo, I am always just playing with what's in my hand and the current board state, and I can leave that for hours or days and come back, and it's the same thing, where I'm looking at my hand, I'm looking at the board state, and I'm trying to make the most optimal move. But in that situation, there's a lot less to worry about.
So much less information is so much more visible to you. And the more you play it, the more familiar you become with the cards. You don't have to go over there and read like, oh, what does this do? You can just say like, oh, Bulwark, I know what that card does. I don't have to reread. You know, I know the Mars creatures. I know what they all do. It's, you know, easier to come back to than like, I have to count 18 cubes on the board. Yep. It's a different experience.
Yeah. Which cards are most likely to come up next, or what combo was I looking for? What was my grand plan in making sure that Paris didn't fall?
Yep.
Yep. So
no, I mean, it's always Paris.
It's always Paris. All right. So let's look at some of the games that have come out in the last couple years. And, well, actually, first, let's look at the people's choice of the top 100, but we're only going to do the top 12, solo games of 2018. So this is from Board Game Geek. And I'm going to start from number 12 and work up to number 1. And then what we'll do is just kind of like, if we've played these, we'll kind of comment on whether or not this is something that we would, we've played solo, would want to play solo. Why is this successful or not? I'm interested in actually how many of these games you guys have played or know of. There's, I would say, of the 12, I've probably played 9 of them. So I probably still win there, but we'll see. So number 12 was Seventh Continent, which I don't think either of you guys have played, right?
No.
All right. So we've talked about this a little bit from time to time, especially since we've given away a couple copies of Seventh Continent. This is a co-op game where you're running around basically a card based world. All the cards are squares, and the cards have numbers on them that will tell you to take other cards from the box that lays them down, or you might find hidden numbers that you can grab, and you have actions, and you're taking actions that burn your skill cards, basically. And once you're out of skill cards, you are dead. So what you're also trying to do is eat and such to take cards from your discard pile, put them back into your draw pile, and essentially it's an adventure game. Sydney and I play this together. It is a very easy game to save. The last time we played this was at Dice Tower Con, which would be July of last year. And we still have a game that's saved at that point that we keep saying over and over that we need to get this out. We need to play this again. And we're going to eventually. But this is one that takes up a lot of table space. So even though it'll be easy to set up, there is also the problem of the longer you're away from it, the more you don't remember about what was around in the world. So we're now going to have to like re-explore where we were, because when you save the game, the map collapses down to the one card that you were on, and then you have to re-explore from that point. So the longer we're away from this, the less likely it is that we're going to resume where we left off. So this is it is a fantastic, well, we've been playing a duo, but it is truly just a solo game. When we're playing together, because no, it's not even turns. It's not like I go, you go. It's, all right, which one of us wants to go and what are we going to do? And you can just, one person can keep going and going and going while the other person just sits back and says, I'll just watch you play. So this is a solo game in all ways, but it is like a solo adventure game that is absolutely worth that time if you want to commit that time to it. If you like solo games, this is the game to get. Now, it's also really hard to get. The second wave of shipping for this is coming out in a couple months, I believe. So you should be able to find them for a relatively reasonable price on eBay. And it also made, it was like hugely successful Kickstarter. So I do expect that they're going to do a third print run of them. But yeah, so that's Seventh Continent. It's fantastic. And I'm sorry, I've never played this guys with you guys. Just the way it works.
Yeah.
Number
live with Sydney now.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. And I hope I'm counting this right. So let's see, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Yes. So number 11, I have never played, but it is a very, very talked about and successful solo game. It's called Friday. If anyone has played this, send us an email. We would love to hear how this plays and what you like about it. And we will touch on it in our feedback episode. Number 10 is Too Many Bones, and I think I've showed this to you both, and we might have played this a long time ago.
I have not played it.
Josh, did you play this with me?
I think I did, but it's very loose in my memory, but I can see the pieces in my mind.
Yeah. This includes a whole lot of dice and some mouse pads with holes in it that represent your characters. And the mechanics here are essentially you're moving around, I believe it's a 4x5 grid. You're going to, with poker chips, and you're going to try to kill monsters, and you're rolling dice to get abilities, and every character has their own custom ability sheet and their custom dice and custom mouse pad that puts it all together. I shouldn't call it a mouse pad, but it's basically mouse pad size and the dice cut out and fit in there.
A neoprene playmat.
Neoprene playmat, correct. And this one is another co-op game that is completely fine playing solo. Like, there's no hidden information. Everything's out in the open. This is a puzzle through and through. You roll the dice and try to figure out the best thing to do with it, which makes sense as to why this is, like, number 10. All right. I know you guys have played this one. Number 9 is Viticulture, the Essentials Edition.
Yes. I have played it, but I've never played it as a solo.
So this is another Stonemaier game. And all of Stonemaier games come with the Automa. Yes, A-U-T-O-M-A. Automa. And I have not played this with the Automa, but it's number 10 on this, or number 9 on this list, and I really kind of want to because I really like this game. And I think that this might be one that's worth learning the Automa for.
I think it's interesting because actually the ones with automons, or however you say it, or some sort of AI built in, I find are more compelling to me as a solo option. And I feel, you know, it kind of gives me that sensation that I'm playing against someone, even though I'm not. It's kind of like simulating that for me. So, you know, I play, a kind of a risk variant online, and there is an automon and an AI that you can play against. And I'll often play that because I'm like, oh, you know, what's he going to do or she going to do to me? Even though it's not a person at all. It's just some sort of, you know, if then, if else, then algorithm. But it gives me that sensation. So I kind of like, yeah, this is cool. Yeah. I'm beating someone. I can pat myself on the back and say, yeah, I beat them.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's nice with the Automas are the company that does them, they are specifically trying to mimic the interaction points between players. So you're playing the game. The Automa is not playing by the rules. It's not trying to mimic what that those characters would do. Anything that does not directly interact with the rest of the players is just kind of hand-waved and taken out of the equation. So right. In Viticulture, for example, there will be a worker placed somewhere on the board because that is something that you have to deal with. But what happens when that worker is placed may not actually be that action. It might be something else completely because, you know, put the worker here and age this wine, which is not something that you could do personally, but it's something that if they had the right cards in place and the right abilities, that might be something that could happen. So that's what they're trying to mimic there, which is a really good way to practice the game. And you're trying to beat this virtual opponent who's also messing with your strategy in the most non-direct way possible, because there's, you know, the cards can't have a grudge. Okay, this next one, I can't speak to it, but I can speak to its successor, and that is Robinson Crusoe, Adventures on the Cursed Island. Now, we tried playing First Martian and just couldn't do it. And First Martian is basically a sequel, not a sequel, but it uses the same game system as Robinson Crusoe. But I will say that Robinson Crusoe has been, every place I've seen, is been touted as a better game than First Martian. So it doesn't surprise me that it's here. But also First Martian as a solo experience, I think would be fine. That was my biggest complaint with First Martian, was that it didn't feel like a multiplayer game.
Yeah, and it was a lot of one person controls the board, and then you get to make three choices, and that was it.
Yep.
There was no interactions, and it took so long to set the board, and one person was just doing that.
Yeah, and what those three, and like if we were all three playing, our choices were so much, like they had to be coordinated. So it was like we discuss as a group what we're going to do, and then we do it. And anytime you're discussing as a group what you're going to do and then everyone just does that thing, it is prime for it's solo activity.
It's very soloable, yeah.
Yep, which could have been great. And like I said, there was a campaign mode to it. Again, I'm not talking about Robinson Crusoe right now. I'm talking about First Martian because they're relatively similar. But that's kind of the feel I got out of this type of game.
Robinson Crusoe, though, seems like a much more compelling theme to me, so...
Yeah, I've never actually played it. I've never played it at all, but now...
It looked pretty.
You may have to track it down and let me know how it is.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, well, the next one is no surprise to me, Arkham Horror, the card game. The only thing that surprises me is it's as low on the list as it is, which is around number 7. But that's okay, because all of the other ones here are pretty good games as well. And we've talked enough about Arkham Horror, so we'll go to number 6, which is the Lord of the Rings card game. Now, this one is another one by Fantasy Flight, and it is a cooperative game. Well, it's a 1-2 player game on the box, but you can play 1-4 if you have two boxes and combine it. The way this game works is you get scenario packs. I think they're adventure packs or quest packs or something like that. But you are going to look at the quest, and you're going to build character decks that are specifically geared to overcome those challenges. And there's tons and tons of different cards now that you can put into them. In fact, so many that if you wanted to have them all, it would be 10 years worth of cards that you were gathering. It's over $1,000 worth of cards. But the people who play this game love this game. Obviously, that's why this is so high on the list. Gloomhaven is number 5, which again, I don't mean to keep teasing you guys that you haven't played it. Eventually, I'm just going to give you my copy and then you can just
do.
I'm going to give you my copy and you can solo it. How's that?
Sure.
Deal. Scythe is number 4. We talked about it briefly. This is Scythe with the Automa using that.
I wonder if the My Little Scythe has an Automa as well.
It does. That'd
be interesting. Awesome.
It does. And I haven't played it with the Automa, but I talked to the designer. And he recommended playing it against it. He's like, yeah, it's hard. I win less than 50% of the time, which you kind of want. You don't want a solo game that just like you can roll over. And My Little Scythe plays so quickly. Like, you can play, I think you play that game solo in probably 25, 30 minutes, which would actually make solo version of My Little Scythe really compelling. And I actually, until you mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, I could definitely see myself putting that together. Number three, and this one is a little surprising to me. Actually, I guess it's not. Because this game is so popular in general, it's not surprising to me that this is also very high on this solo game list, and that's Terraforming Mars, which I do not know how the solo experience works for Terraforming Mars. I'm pretty sure it's built in, so there's like a solo that you get with it, but I may have to check this out. Like, I didn't realize it was this high on the list, and I don't know. Maybe this is a way for me to kind of like Terraforming Mars. Then again, there's a lot of games that I really do like playing solo, so I probably will never touch this. Number two is Spirit Island. We talked about this as the Kickstarter that Kitty missed.
One of my regrets, my regret section, that we're not doing the Kickstarter edition anymore, or it would be coming up every week that I passed up on this. Well, and it's getting such rave reviews, and everyone seems to love it so much.
Well, it's number two on the 2018 list, and it hadn't been out for much longer. Like, it came in at the tail end of 2018.
Yeah.
So
everyone is loving this game.
Yeah.
Full of regrets.
Yeah, that's all right. It happens. And for some reason, I'm still, even after like watching the videos and reading the rule book and stuff, it still doesn't call to me. I don't regret it. But again, it might be one of those things where there's a lot of co-op games out there, and I have some that I really, really love. And if it's not scratching an itch that I have that's not already being filled, it's easy for me to kind of pass up on it. And then number one has been number one for probably since it came out. Yeah. And that is Mage Knight the Board Game, which just came out with an Ultimate Edition, which includes all of the expansions in a big box. And
Gloomhaven size box.
Yeah. I will say that Mage Knight, I do not like this game multiplayer, not because the game's bad, but because it lends itself to some very, very interesting types of players. So I could probably play this with, you know, Sydney, and it would be completely fine. But the people I've played this with have been so ultra competitive, like super puzzle solving, that it's just it takes all the fun out of it for me.
No, that was what I was going to ask was, you know, who are these interesting players? But you kind of described them just then.
Yeah, they're people that are like, because Mage Knight is a puzzle at its heart. You know what you're going to draw. There's little piles of chips and stuff when you go exploring, and you know the percentages of what can come out of those. And you have cards. They're dual card using hands that you're managing. So there's a top card or top part of the card and a bottom part of the card. So they all have dual use. And where you're going and when you explore and what you do and when you do it, all of these things matter. So it's this huge puzzle game. And it never occurred to me when I first played it to play it solo. So I just kind of passed up on it, saying, okay, Mage Knight is a really cool game that I've only played it with people that I'm not super crazy about. So it's kind of given it a bad taste in my mouth. But at the same time, it's like, because it's so highly rated, it keeps making me want to go. It's like, well, maybe I should try the solo. And now with the Ultimate box out, Maybe. We'll see.
So something we didn't talk about last time that didn't really occur to me that I've picked up a couple of in the intermittent time is puzzle books. And I do these like logic puzzles, and I have a couple that I'm really enjoying. Journal 29 is one of them. And that one, you solve the puzzles and then you go put the keyword into the app, and that, or it's not even an app, it's a website, and it gives you the clues that you'll need to solve later puzzles. And then I also have one that's, what is it? The Montague Island Mysteries. And these are logic puzzles. They give you like 8 clues. You have to figure out who's the murderer. And do these count as solo games, or are they puzzles? Are they something different? What's your thought on that?
I totally think they count. I mean, this is what I was saying. When I was younger, I used to do the puzzle book version for your kids, basically. And I adored them. And even, you know, in college, I remember hearing about Sudoku and being like, what is this thing? And then someone explained how it works. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And got totally sucked into it. And I was just really kind of like, oh, I want to beat this thing. So it's interesting to me that I think it's just the friction of some, like, solo games that is just too much setup for me versus what I get out of it. But when the friction is low, like Sudoku or a puzzle game, a puzzle book or a puzzle journal like this, I'm all about it.
Yeah. And I think Sudoku is a good one, a good example of this as well, which totally qualifies as a solo game. Escape room games.
Oh, yeah.
Those have become really, really big recently, which are basically just a box of puzzles. And
yeah.
Yes, you can play them with other people and are kind of designed to do that. But for the most part, you could play them by yourself and just have this puzzle, you know, that you're trying to solve. The graphic novel adventures that I got, I think, 2 Gen Cons ago, those are great solo games. You know, they're basically choose your own adventure. Another one was The Legacy of Dragonhold, which is another choose your own adventure. And then Choose Your Own Adventure, the choose your own adventure game that recently came out, is also another really like good solo game where it's like, I can just sit down, I'm playing through a story, and because there's a story there, it actually makes it compelling to keep going and try to, you know, beat the adventure and replay it later if I want to, but also allows you to share that with other people if you need. Because like a choose your own adventure book, you're basically, that is a pure solo experience. But with this choose your own adventure game types, you can actually play with other people and have everyone input, because now you have this like table presence where you can have other people involved as well, but you can still fall back to that whole solo experience. Let's see, what else have come out in the last couple of years that kind of changed things? Oh, roll and writes. Roll and writes have become huge. And a lot of roll and writes are very, very easy to just play by yourself, because most roll and writes are one thing happens and everybody reacts to what happened there. And you're trying to get the highest score. And the person with the highest score wins. There's almost no player interaction whatsoever. So you can play these roll and writes over and over and over and just see how good you do. We played Railroad Inc., and I could see myself playing that by myself if we hadn't played it to death with our group.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, like, I still don't quite get the concept, but once you said Railroad Inc., which I have played, I get more of an idea. So I guess in that game there's a pool of dice and you roll them, and there's like different things you could do with the symbols on those dice, which is normally like making roads or lakes to like make bigger structures. But it seems like that's the kind of general gist of Roll and Write. Is that how you'd describe
it? Yeah, I mean, it's, if you think about it, like playing Yahtzee solo,
right?
So you're just going to play until you no longer have any valid moves and see what your score is. And then you do it again and see if you can beat your old score. So really, there's all kinds of, any non-interactive roll and write can be played solo. Anshan Clever, I believe, is the name of the one. It's, there's an app for it. But that is apparently one that's very, very popular that people really like playing. And they'll just play it over and over and over, because they're also so fast to get to the table. And it's normally just a score sheet and sometimes some special dice, but, you know, and you can just play them over and over and just pass the time rolling dice and trying to do your best scores. And because they almost all, because they're roll and write, they end up with like this cool thing that you've created out of it. Like you can almost create like a collage of all your roll and writes. You know, every time you're done with Railroad Inc., take a picture of your board and like, you know, you're drawing and you're making good. If it's artistic, you can make it look really cool as you're trying to build up the best boards.
So one other game that I got to the table this year that I was very excited about, that I've decided now I'm going to do more as a solo than with other people, is Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. Oh. This game it's almost like a puzzle book, but it has a very fun table presence to it. It's got this huge map where you get to go to the different locations and question people. But all you're doing is you read the mystery, you choose the location, you go there, you read a paragraph. And when you're with a group of people and you're reading it out loud, there's an amount of social interaction that can be really fun, or it can be really frustrating if somebody is like, obviously totally off track and you have to like navigate that social situation of, I'm just going to ignore what they're saying, or, oh yeah, let's go see, oh no, that's not a thing. And you can only say like, oh, that's not a choice. Oh, that's not a choice, so many times where you're like, we have to move in a different direction, you know? And I think these would be just really fun to do on my own. The baby's taking a nap, I can get it out. There aren't any pieces really. It's just a map and a book that I'm going through. And so I'm going to try one of those on my own and see if I like it that way too.
Yeah, you're going to have to let me know how that goes. Because I also have, I bought Chronicles of Crime, which is kind of the AR, augmented reality detective board game, which is a pure co-op, but I think you can actually play this solo as well. And I've been having trouble like getting it to the table because I haven't actually learned to play it. And I think that like my casual friends would really love this because you have the little 3D glasses that attach to the phone and you're looking around the your space and trying to describe things that you see. And playing this solo at least once would allow me to get over that hurdle of like having to teach a new game that's relatively complicated and just, you know, set up and structure, but still be able to like share that experience and have a real experience myself the first time.
I also think you should crack open Wingspan and see if you can play that one solo and let me know how that goes.
So funny you should ask that. So Wingspan, we just got this in the mail a couple days ago. And we, so Kitty, you taught this, well, you learned it and taught it to a group of people at a board game party we just had on Saturday. And yeah, you didn't get through the full thing because it was a 5-player game and you were just learning and you only had like an hour and a half.
And we had a KeyForge tournament to get to.
Yeah. Yes. So I was looking at it today and I'm like, oh, there's an automata here. So let me see how this plays. The automata to Wingspan is really good. I have not played it. I watched how to play it. And it's very, very simple. So you set the game up like you're playing one person. So for those who don't know, Wingspan is a new game by Stonemaier Games. So, of course, it has an automa associated with it. It is going to be one of the best games of 2018. I know it's only January, but the buzz around this game is ridiculously...
It's huge.
It's huge. And it's an engine building game. So everyone's kind of building their own engine. Now, there are certain points of interaction. There are some cards that trigger when other people do things. There are a pool of cards that you can draft from, and other people can draft those cards before you. But the automa, the way it works is you flip a card, and it's going to say you're either going to, you know, draft a card, you're going to play a bird, you're going to do get some eggs, you're going to get some food. And whatever you happen to do, that affects the game state of what your turn could be. And how when that happens, if you play a card, it goes face up in a pile. If you draft a card, it goes face down in a pile. And at the end of the game, you're going to count how many eggs you have and how many eggs the automa has, how many face up and face down. So face up cards count for whatever point value is on their face. Face down card count for a set amount of points based on the difficulty. So 4, 5, or 6, depending on how difficult you want to play. And then there's some other scoring that will, you know, kind of who got first place in certain areas. And you're just trying to beat the automa, but you're still playing the actual real game as if you were playing this with anyone else, like all of these games are. And the simplicity of the automa, because the Scythe automa is not super simple. The Wingspan automa is very, very simple. And after we get done here, I'm going to go down and play a solo game of it, unless Sydney wants to play, then we'll play a 2-player game.
Yeah, I'm totally jealous. I think it's because there's so much less player interaction with Wingspan than there is with Scythe. It's so much easier to not, you because it's replicating those player interaction points, there's very, very few player interaction points. So it really lends itself pretty well to it. I'm not surprised to hear that it's fairly streamlined.
Yep, and Wingspan has a board, which is a scoring board, that has two sides to it. One side is like mm-hmm. the non-confrontational side, and the other side is the slightly confrontational side, where the
non-confrontational side.
Yeah, so the slightly confrontational side, if you're competing in certain categories, you'll have a first, second, and third place, and you'll get different points for those. In the non-confrontational side, you'll all get the same points for them. And when you're playing the automa, it actually recommends that you play with the confrontational side so that you get a little bit more interaction, just so you have that extra variability in there. But yeah, Wingspan is one of those games that I'm going to... this is one that I could see myself playing the solo. And I know we talked about how I'm like, I don't need to get a copy of this. If you have a copy of it, I might have to get a copy of it depending on how well this plays. So we'll see.
Let me know. Yeah.
All right. This is our first revisited episode. Like I say, we're going to probably do maybe a dozen of them this year. Along with this comes an announcement. So we're kicking Josh off the podcast.
How dare you? I'm leaving. I'm quitting.
You can't quit. I've already fired you. So which is not necessarily true. We love Josh. We really do. And Josh has, like, you have other things you want to do and accomplish, and you have work that you travel for quite frequently and stuff. And in order to kind of keep more regular voice so that we don't have to like pull in our significant others from time to say, hey, also Josh can't make it.
Also because Sydney's going to, you know, have something to do while you're recording the podcast very shortly.
Exactly. So what we're going to do is Josh is going to be part of all of our revisited episodes, and any other episode that he wants to be a part of, we'll bring him back. But we're going to have a semi-permanent replacement that will be our full-time, and then Josh will be our super special guest because, again, this is not an upset thing. We love Josh quite a bit.
No, of course not. And you can't, you know, get away from this voice. It'll be bad.
So Fletcher, who has been on the show once, he was actually our first replacement for Josh way, way back in episode 35.
That's a fun one.
It is a fun one. It's the one that Josh is like, I have to miss this one. And it's the one I don't want to miss.
Oh my God.
So that was our
listeners might remember that episode better than me.
I think everyone remembers it better than we do. Cause that was our drinking games episode. We weren't part of the Dice Tower Network yet. So that was a fun episode. You should go back and listen.
Yeah. We kept it as family friendly as we could, but
And we'll let Fletcher introduce himself next week, but he still fills the same role that Josh has, which Fletcher likes games, but he's in that casual category. So he's, you know, the number of games that he's played is probably like, you know, mainstream new games is probably less than 20. Not mainstream, I guess hobbyist new games is less than 20.
Yeah.
His significant other is a non-gamer, very similar to Gloria, and he has a much better voice than I do, so that also does the same thing. It's not British though, but he has a radio voice, so he took broadcasting definitely and stuff like that. But we'll introduce Fletcher next week. This past Sunday, Gen Con badges went on sale, and we will be at Gen Con. We will have a show at Gen Con. We will be giving away all kinds of games at Gen Con. If Josh isn't watching a solar eclipse, we may have him at Gen Con.
I'm wondering how many you're going to do this year, as soon as you'll have Player 3 on board, Chris.
Origins and Gen Con for sure.
Yeah.
Gamehole Con for sure. Mm-hmm. And we've already lined up grandparent babysitting for some of those. Right. So for Origins, we'll probably bring him along because he'll be small enough where he's not crawling around.
Yep.
For Gen Con,
Gamehole Con is going to be an adventure.
Yeah.
From my experience.
Yeah. Gamehole Con, he'll probably stay with the grandparents. And then Gen Con, we'll have to see. It could go either way, but it might be another grandparents one. Because I mean, I don't want to leave him. I don't know. He's not here yet. He could be. I don't know. Sydney could be in labor literally right now. I think she would let me know. But she's super polite. She's like, no, you're recording. So you can't. I didn't want to bother you. I'm like, okay, fine.
I believe it. When we used to live with you at the old apartment, she'd like literally sit outside in the hallway instead of open the door, even though opening the door, I don't think would have made a difference.
Yep. Yeah. And part of that is because she didn't want to be on the show. She's like, no, I don't want you to like say something and make me talk on the mics. And then all of a sudden she becomes a guest host.
Yeah. Now she's been. Yeah.
So, but anyway, so that's happening. That's our next convention. But I think that's all. I mean, anything else you guys want to add?
No, good.
I don't think so.
All right. Then if you want to follow us, you can follow us on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast. Twitter's at @TabletopGameTLK. Kitty is Lawful Good Mom. Josh is Josh's Blonde. I'm Game Master Chris. If you want to support us via Patreon, go to TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon. And as soon as I figure out how to have people added to our Discord channel, I think one of the Patreon benefits will be you'll be able to listen to us record live. If someone knows how to do that, send me an email and put Discord in the subject line so I read it quickly. And because I really want to be able to do that so people can like listen to us and correct us in real time.
Yeah, be part of our chat.
And be part of the chat. All right, your turn.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. And you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons: Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Accaretti, Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimwitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan the Governator Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, David Radke, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, Jordan Livingston, Chad Covey, Anne Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Eric Salander, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Traylor, Tim Vernig, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, Glenn Cotter, Jesse Wachowiak, Barry Peterson, Ben Gary, Emil Jewel Jacobson, and Marina Stevens. Until next week, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. I had to go back old school for the final credits on this episode for you.
Yeah, I know. I got the whole thing in, and you got to get to have the last word, which you don't.
Which is important, since you stole it last time.
I know. I just couldn't help it. It was good, though. It was good radio.
It was good. Maybe we'll have you come back and read the credits more often.
Yeah.